Anna here. Now, are you an entrepreneur who wants to write and publish a book about your own failures turned successes? Well, good news, that's what my company, Legacy Launchpad, does. Find out more at LegacyLaunchpadPub.com. That's LegacyLaunchpadPub.com. Now, should you do a book, you ask? I think so. Why? Because you're worth it. Now back to the show. Now, the best books are made up of stories. And let's face it, the best stories are about bouncing back from failure. I'm Anna David, obsessed with books, a New York Times bestselling author, and the CEO of Legacy Launchpad Publishing. And I only achieve those things because I picked myself up again after failing and found my way to success. And that makes me uniquely qualified to get the best stories about failure and success out of other people.
Failure is always a learning experience.
So after 6 months, I told him that I Googled sociopath and he had all of the symptoms and I found myself out of job.
At that time, it was supposed to be a side hustle.
Well, the side hustle started to make far more money than the real hustle. So after six months, I quit my job.
Welcome to Fail Your Way to Success.
Welcome to the podcast that welcomes listeners who have experienced failure and know that failure is not the end, but oftentimes just the beginning. Today's interview is with the wonderful Bobbi Carlton. I discovered her because she is the founder of Innovation Women, which is an online speaker bureau that, unlike what it suggests, does welcome men. However, her mission in life is to help more women get on stages. What did she say? No more pale, male, and stale. And she also has a very successful PR and marketing firm. She runs Lioness Magazine. And in this episode, we talked about how... Well, I sort of threw this at her, this question about how do her formative years relate to what she does today? What have her biggest failures been? How did she bounce back? And so many other things. So with that, I give you Bobbi Carlton. Well, let's get into it. We had a terrific warm-up, didn't we? My cat really likes you. So let us talk about your business, the Innovation Women business. This is how I discovered you. Tell me and my listeners about that business, please.
All right. So we call Innovation Women a visibility bureau, not necessarily a speakers bureau, even though that is probably the closest approximation, because we are a mission-based company. We are focused on getting more women in particular on stage at conferences and events, because two-thirds of all conference speakers are men, which leaves women out of a lot of business and career opportunities. So Innovation Women is a platform. It is a community. It is a database. And it is really designed with educating and uplifting women who are interested in public speaking for greater visibility.
And why? When did you start this company?
So I started it actually with a crowdfunding campaign in 2014. And then we launched the first iteration of the website in 2015. So it's been a while.
It has been a while. I mean, it's 2015 sounds like a minute ago, but it was actually, you know, a decade ago. So how many women are on it? Oh, but you told me there are men on it. Explain.
Yeah, I mean, I started really focused on the whole gender aspect of public speaking and gaps. But at the same time, over the years, I've realized there are a lot of people who are excluded from the stage. And if you look at the entire population, you know, it's the male, pale, and stale folks that get up there on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And it's the rest of us, non-binary individuals, people with disabilities, people of color, and women who are excluded from the stage. So I'm a big fan of getting everybody who's not up there currently the opportunity to see public speaking as something for them.
I've never heard male, pale, and stale. That's genius. Did you make that up?
I've heard male and pale, and then I added stale because at one point I had said the same four old white guys, and I was like, oh, old, stale. But I actually didn't mean stale when I came up with it originally. One of the things about public speaking is speaking begets speaking. So if you're going to more than one conference in a particular industry, you are quite likely to see the same people over and over again. People get on the circuit.
Yep.
And they get invited because they were speaking at this event or that event, which is great for us women when we are trying to build that kind of profile. But what ends up happening in a lot of conferences in different industries is you keep seeing stale conversations, the same conversations.
Yep.
So I want fresh. I want exciting. I want new.
So how many people are on the website?
So we have about 2,500 active speakers right now. We have a mailing list of about 25,000. And that mailing list also encompasses people who are on the platform as event managers. So we have about 9,000 people who are self-identified as event managers who have either done at least one invitation on the platform, or they have put up a call for speakers asking speakers to apply.
That's massive. So what is a way to find success on the, as somebody who recently joined, tell me, shamelessly, I ask you, what is the best way to find success on it?
I think one of the biggest avenues for success is our Friday morning Zoom. We call it Speaker Friend Friday. And Speaker Friend Friday is community activity. Every Friday morning, I am hanging out on Zoom and I am talking to 70 to 100 of my closest friends about everything related to speaking, building a speaking business, building a speaking career, promoting your book, because authorship and speaking go hand in hand. There's a lot that goes into Speaker Friend Fridays, but it's really the aspect of connecting with other speakers. Speaking is highly secretive. I think everybody who has ever stepped foot on a stage says something to themselves like this: oh, I am up here. I am being successful at this. This means I could tell other people how to do that. And they see different services, different offerings out in the wild where people are spending big bucks learning how to be speakers, because I think we've all seen these. Oh, Michelle Obama gets, you know, $250,000 for 20 minutes on stage. Number one, you are not Michelle Obama. Number two, oh my God, that happens after years, and it happens to celebrities. It doesn't happen to the rest of us, at least not on a regular basis, and at least not right off the bat.
Yes, I will say, having fallen for several of those scams, you know, there was some site where I bought a list. This guy talked me into buying his, you know, $1,000 list of event planners that was, you know, all dead emails. I fell for that. And then, as I told you, I found your site after finding a site, we don't have to name it, that promised all of these things. And I asked a couple people who were on it, and they all said, oh, this is great. And then I thought about it, and I go, hey, those people I asked, they are not successful speakers. And then I paid for some consultation with them, and I just realized this place is totally full of it. And yes, and you mentioned you knew who I was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things is not every system is going to work for everybody. And I think people who have been on stage and have had successful careers, they tend to kind of blank on the years of work it took to get to that place. And I don't think it's a great sales tactic to go, hey, work really hard for 20 years and maybe you can get where I am today. It doesn't offer that instant transformation that makes people whip out a checkbook.
Yeah. So you have to make false promises.
You know, like it's work. I mean, this is if you want to build a speaking business and a speaking career, it doesn't happen overnight. And it certainly is something that takes a lot of effort and a lot of honing of your skills.
Yeah.
And you have to invest the time and energy and the resources into making it happen.
Yeah. And there certainly isn't a direct path. I mean, with college speaking, you can do NACA. Yes, that is an option. But with corporate speaking, there doesn't seem to be a direct path. It's just sort of try a bunch of avenues.
I mean, I tend to tell people that you speak at the conferences and events and you drop breadcrumbs along the way that says, oh, I do this for corporations too. And knock on wood, when you knock it out of the park from the stage, there's a little lineup at the bottom of the stage waiting for you to come off who wants your card. That's the plan.
That's the best way, you would say. What sort
of events?
That's
one of the ways. I think also a lot of speakers do a really good job of connecting with people they've worked with before. You know, it's like I came out of a company that got acquired by IBM. So some of my former coworkers are at IBM. I have great connections with a whole bunch of folks that I've worked with in the past, but I still get some of my best speaking gigs by speaking at industry events and somebody in the audience comes running up and says, what does it take to get you to do that at my company?
Dreamy.
Audition.
What are some of these events and how do people find them?
You find them on the Innovation Women Day. No, I'm just kidding. All right. You do, but frankly, it's not that hard. You can spend hours searching on Google. Like Google is your friend. It is also your enemy. But you can search on Google and look for the words call for speakers and call for speakers and your topic and call for speakers and your topic and say next year, because these things are booked way in advance. And once you have a good list of the big events in your area, you can actually apply to speak at them. And that's the database that we have inside Innovation Women. I think right now we have about 800 different events that are currently open with calls for speakers on the Innovation Women platform. And we add anywhere between 50 and 100 a week.
And are most of those non-paid?
It's hard to say. When I started Innovation Women, I actually did a survey of 360 event managers because I had worked in placing executives on stage for decades at that point. And I knew, you know, vast majority of the things that I was seeing at conferences and events paid nobody. And I was right. About half of the folks that answered my surveys, and by the way, I had people that did events for CES, and I had people that did local meetups answer my surveys. Mm-hmm. About half had no budget whatsoever for speakers. It's not even in the business model. And by the way, big conferences like CES pay nobody. South by Southwest pays nobody. Like these are big conferences that are offering incredible visibility. They know they don't have to pay anybody, so they don't. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's their prerogative. The interesting slice of my survey was that 42% of conference managers pay some speakers. They have money for keynotes. They often have money for people like doing the workshops, and they have discretionary funds. Mm-hmm. So that means that they are what I call the cagey event managers. They are not being real forthcoming or real public about if they pay anybody at all. And They don't want to have everybody show up with their hand out. So they're very quiet about whether they pay anybody. And, you know, they look at these groups very differently. There's a lot of stratification in the speaker world. And, you know, like I could go and apply for one of those events. And, yeah, they're going to pay the celebrity keynote and they're going to pay the person who has a book and is an author. But they're not going to pay the featured speakers and the people doing the panels and the people doing breakouts. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand the stratification. And I can't say to our members, oh, this event pays because they gave money to one celebrity. Mm-hmm. That's apples to oranges conversation. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about failure. When I say the word failure, what comes to mind?
Yeah, it's funny. All of my companies I started, and just background, I have three companies and I bought two more during the early days of the pandemic. All of my companies are actually like the product of some failure or another. My first company, the day job for me, how I make an actual living, Carlton PR Marketing, and is an agency, started because the world changed in 2008, and the startup that I was working at the time ceased to be able to pay me. So I was like, all right, you know, cutting me loose. I've got to get something going because there were no jobs. It was the Great Recession. And so I started my own company because of the failure of another company. And I feel, even to this day, that I learned more at that failed startup than I've probably learned anywhere else. Because I think a lot of times with success, you don't know exactly why you succeeded. But with failure, oh yeah, I know exactly what I did wrong.
So interesting. So what did you do wrong?
In this particular case, I was working with a kids book company. We had a series of books. We had an online virtual world. I mean, this was 2006, 2007 for kids. This is like super progressive stuff. And we also had a line of gifts and accessories for preteen girls. And we ended up licensing the book series to Simon & Schuster. And focusing our attention in the online world, which, you know, looking back, yeah, that's scalable. It's the whole digital world. It's exciting stuff. But at the same time, licensing to Simon & Schuster moved us from wholesale to royalties. So we went from $4 a book to 70 cents a book. And the reality is we were knocking it out of the park. We were doing really well in book sales. And $4 a book could support a company. 70 cents for basically the same amount of books could not support a company. So, you know, like just understanding all of the changes that we were making and how we were not able to capitalize on this the way we thought we were going to. I was like, yep, there's the problem right there.
I mean, I am very anti-traditional publishing. So do you, I'll latch on to anything that sounds a little bit negative about traditional publishing. But so do you think that was the problem working with traditional publishers?
I mean, you know, we were so excited at the time. And, you know, don't get me wrong, people at Simon Schuster were fabulous. They had a marketplace, they had channels, they were awesome at things like foreign rights. You know, like they knew more about the publishing industry than, you know, than we could ever learn. At the same time, it was, I think part and parcel of the issue is nobody can ever sell your stuff like you. Like, there's always that one step removed. There's always a little less passion to what's going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have many other things to worry about other than you. So, you know, like, I walked in the door as a marketing person, as a PR person with, okay, this is how we're going to pitch each one of our 22 books. And they were like, we're Simon & Schuster, honey. People come to us.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. That never occurred to me. Well, like,
yeah, I mean, I was an author published by Simon & Schuster, and it never occurred to me that they had 30 other books that month that they were releasing. I was just like, why not pay attention to me?
Why not me?
So what did you learn from that?
I learned that I like control. I'm a little bit of a control freak. Yep. I also learned that scalable is important. You know, as an individual, you are not scalable. As a team, you're still not quite as scalable, but technology can help you scale. So there was a whole bunch of like little lessons that I learned. And one of them is the difference between your price tag when you're selling a thing, and even with all the expenses that go into selling that thing, it's very different than just pulling down a royalties check.
Yeah.
And let's face it, you still have to make back your advance. And so there's going to be a delay on ever seeing those royalty checks.
Yeah, I never saw any in six books, but that's the reality of most authors, which people don't know.
People don't tend to think about the fact that very few authors
earn out,
make a living from being an author. There's something else.
Yes, indeed.
And it's actually very similar to being a speaker. Very few speakers just make a living being a speaker. There are coaches, there are consultants, there are facilitators. There are all different kinds of things that speakers do. Because just speaking is often not enough.
They create websites called Innovation Women. What?
I don't try to compete with our speakers as a speaker. I do speaking to promote Innovation Women and to encourage other women to speak, but I'm not necessarily out there selling myself as a speaker.
But you are a very successful speaker, and you've done TEDx. Have you done more than one TEDx?
I did one, and I would not call that a huge raging success because I did it on 3 days' notice.
What?
Yes, I was invited to do a TEDx. And I got the phone call from somebody who knew me, who said, hey, I'm one of the coordinators for the Suffolk University TEDx. And I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, as a speaker, this is so exciting. And I said, of course, I'd love to speak at your TEDx. When is it? Tuesday. Like, oh, no, I have a whole database full of speakers. I have 2,500 speakers. I will find you one of them. And I did. I found five speakers who were willing to turn on a dime and do a TEDx with almost no notice. And they didn't want any of them. They wanted me because their theme was innovation. I was like, oh, yeah, I started two companies with innovation in the name. I see why you want me. And I went in. I spent one day just watching other people's TEDx's. Mm-hmm. That night, I wrote my presentation. The next day, I went in for the dress rehearsal. And speaking of failure, oh, I bombed. I was so bad. And I could see the panic in their eyes. And there was panic in my eyes, too. And I said, you know what, guys? Don't worry, because I know exactly what I need to do to fix it. So I went home that night And I rewrote what I was doing, and I spent the next day rehearsing on my own. And I walked in that night and I gave it. And I'm not embarrassed by it, but I would say that I'm not thrilled by it.
Yeah.
And I never got the TEDx like coaching experience. And I always feel like, oh, I missed out.
You could do it again.
I could. I could.
Yeah. I just had an experience. I went into Vistage to do, I, for Vistage, you do 3 for free and then you get approved as a Vistage speaker. And right. I had 3 in a week. Number one did not go well, but it gave me a lot to do for number 2. Number 2 went better and number 3 went the best. But my God, was that a trial by fire experience, which I did not enjoy.
Yeah.
But I learned
I've gone in and done some stuff with Vistage before as a member. They have 2 different levels of groups. And for people's background, this is a peer group. And you pay in to either their executive level or what's called their trusted advisor level. Mm. And I experimented a little bit with it. I was curious about how different peer groups worked. And so I signed up for the trusted advisor level, which is a little bit more affordable. And generally, they don't bring speakers into the trusted advisor level. It's more of a peer group, a real peer group. But I was investigating their whole structure around their speaker group. And it's a lot. You know, you don't want to screw those up.
Yeah, I got approved. But in my perspective, it felt like my driving test where the guy turned to me at the end of it and he goes, "You passed," with total shock because I got a 71 and you needed a 70 to pass. Not true. I got great reviews, but it felt like, oh, just by the skin of her teeth. But it was really stressful. But let us talk. Okay, so I loved what you said about failure and, you know, you can't on your own really succeed. You said something like this: with a team, you have better chances. With technology, you have, with a team and technology, you have the best chances of success. That is a great lesson to learn. So how much have you relied on technology for your business?
A tremendous amount. The good news is that as a speaker myself, as a person who has placed speakers, I have been on both sides of the equation. Innovation Women is what's called a two-sided marketplace. It has to have something for everyone. And when I started, I crowdfunded in order to have the money to build the platform. But I was really crowdfunding for a different reason. I was crowdfunding to make sure that I had speakers right up front. And I already had a list of event managers because my second company, Innovation Nights, was an events company in Boston that was focused on the startup community. And because of I was running that, I had also a weekly newsletter that went out promoting events. Other event managers would come to me and say, "Can you promote this event and this one and this one and this one?" So I had this whole big list of event managers already. And I had the crowdfunded people, the people that had literally given me $100 and said, "I want to be a part of your platform whenever it exists." So I had already both sides of the two-sided platform. So at that point, it was just, how do I create the technology that brings them together, that allows them to get what they want? Everybody has to win in a two-sided marketplace. So make it easy for the event managers and make it make sense for the speakers.
And did you hire developers with that?
We did. We did. We let's go back to that failure thing again. Mm. So I was raising the money. I was crowdfunding it. And a person appeared into my life from above and said, "I love what you're doing. My company loves what you're doing. We're going to help you." You save that money that you're raising and you can use it for marketing and other things. We'll build your platform for free. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's like an angel appeared. And we were kind of coming down to the wire in terms of, you know, this thing needed to be done in like 2 months. And that person said, oops, I'm so sorry. We're busy now. Can't do this. So we're going to introduce you to somebody else and you're going to have to pay them. But you did raise your money. So you've got the money to do that. I was like, okay. So the person they brought in to replace them kind of confronted me really quickly and said, there's really nothing here. It's just a scaffolding. It's just, you know, some pictures. You have to build a whole site. And I was like, oh, all right. So I went and found friends whose startup had failed. Mm-hmm. And they had a development team that was raring to go and ready to jump right in. And I'm still working with some members of that team today. Mm-hmm. They are still there. They did an amazing job. They launched a day early. They just did an amazing job. And it was the first time I used tools like Slack for instant communication. You know, we were all round the clock working like crazy to get this thing rolling. And it happened and it worked. And it's still the same basic architecture that we keep improving upon every day.
Well, when you said the publicity and marketing is the day job, are these other companies profitable? Because it's very affordable, I will say, as a member. Is it profitable?
Innovation Women? Mm-hmm. Sure.
There was some...
I usually tell people Innovation Women is a mission-based company, and it does have an investor who would very much like me to make money someday. But it is more about the mission. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can get 10,000 women on this platform, any request that an event manager has, we would probably be able to solve. We would be able to deliver on. That's my goal. Because every day I have event managers who come in and go, yeah, I didn't find what I needed. Mm. Or sometimes they tell me, oh my gosh, I did find what I needed. Like, yay, we're good in that area. So I need different cross sections. I need people in all kinds of geographic areas. I need people in industry segments, and I need people who can cover topics.
Yep.
So there's a lot there. Even with 2,500, like still sometimes you'll do a search and like, nope, I didn't find anybody. Sometimes though you do a search and you're like, wow, I had no idea we had three different speakers who can talk about near-death experiences. Who knew? That was a recent search I did and I was like, huh.
Well, so let's talk about your who. Who is it that you serve across all of these different businesses?
Again, two-sided marketplace. I serve event managers who are trying very hard to create diverse and inclusive events. I am also serving people who are looking for visibility and they want to be seen as thought leaders. They want to be seen as experts. It's very interesting because we also have members who are not the least interested in public speaking. And you're like, why would they be a member? They're a member because they see what we do in terms of promotions, in terms of their ability to contribute articles to Lioness Magazine, to have their book reviewed on Lioness Magazine, which is one of the other companies I bought. They like what we do for promotions. We promote everything our speakers do, whether it's podcast guesting or an award. They like the community. They like what they learn from it. So they're joining more than just a speaking platform. They are joining a community that is focused on promoting women and helping elevate them and helping them be seen as thought leaders and experts.
And why do you do what you do? Why is it important to Bobby to help women do this?
Oh, why is it important? I get incensed. Like, I usually tell people I started Innovation Women because I was pissed off. But I do think there's a certain part of me that just gets annoyed and realizes that I have something to offer. I want to be liked. No, just kidding. I do think there is some aspect of that. You know, you have a skill set. You want to be able to use it. And my skill set is bringing people together so that everybody wins. I did that with Innovation Nights. Innovation Nights was designed to help startups get more visibility, but it was also designed to help people who were really involved in social media have content that they could share and to build their audiences. So everybody wins.
Do you think that's related to anything that happened to you during formative years? Why is connecting people important? Why is helping women important?
I can do it formative years. Gosh, I don't know. My parents were divorced when I was very young, but both parents went on and got married and had whole families. There were things that, you know, you can't do that. You're a girl. There was some aspects of that. My mom said that she got really annoyed on the day I came home and told her that girls aren't good in math.
Interesting.
I went on to get a degree in broadcasting, even though I have what's called a face for radio. Thank you, Dr. Kesh, who was my freshman college broadcasting teacher.
I was once read online that I have a voice made for print.
Nice.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. There are things that you can always look back at and say, did it scar me for life? And I would say, I don't think so.
Well, this has been fantastic. Let's wrap up with, what is your top tip, or what are your top tips for bouncing back from failure?
Bouncing back from failure, I think, requires a sense of righteous anger. So, you know, you have to be able to say, gosh, darn it, that is not what I intended, what I wanted, or what I believe should happen. And a dose of realism, like, okay, maybe it shouldn't have happened, or I didn't want it to happen, but it did. And a sense of where you can go forward. So you need that path laid out in front of you. Sometimes you have to bushwhack your own path. But you need to have a place to go.
I love it. I love it. So if people want to find out more about you, join the site, all of those things, where should they go?
Innovationwomen.com.
And I am just going to say, the fact that you help us make those videos is easily worth the price of admission. beyond. So if you're a woman,
every speaker needs a speaker video.
Oh, and then you make it so easy. So if you're just even toying with the idea of being a thought leader, getting on stages, and you're a woman, although you don't have to be a woman, I told you my male friend was interested. So if you're a person who is interested in this, definitely go to the website. And Bobby, thank you so much for chatting with me, and you all, thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to Fail Your Way to Success. Now, if there's anything I love more than a failure to success story, it's a review. So I hope you'll think about leaving one. For more information about the show, go to failyourway.com. And for more information about publishing a book about how you failed your way to success, or just to find out more about what I do, Go to LegacyLaunchpadPub.com.